right here on VOA 1, The Hits.
Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
On today's program, you will hear stories from Dan Friedel and Jonathan Evans. Dan joins Jill Robbins to present this week's Ask a Teacher. We close with an American story. This week, it is The Return of a Private. But first, reporters Maria Ressa of the Philippines and Dmitry Muratov of Russia won the 2021 Nobel Peace Prize on Friday. The two won the prize for their fight for freedom of expression in countries where journalists have faced continuing pressure, attacks, and even murder. Berit Rice-Andersen chairs the Norwegian Nobel Committee. She said the two were awarded for their courageous fight for freedom of expression in their countries. Rice-Andersen added, "They are representatives of all journalists who stand up for this ideal in a world in which democracy and freedom of the press face increasingly adverse conditions." She added, "Free, independent, and fact-based journalism serves to protect against abuse of power, lies, and war propaganda." Ressa is the first winner of a Nobel Prize in any field from the Philippines. The Nobel Committee noted that, in 2012, Ressa co-founded Rappler. The news website has centered critical attention on what the Nobel Committee called President Rodrigo Duterte's controversial, murderous anti-drug campaign in the Philippines. Rappler has also shown how social media is being used to spread false news and attack opponents. Ressa was found guilty last year of libel and sentenced to jail. In August, a Philippine court dismissed the case. Ressa said she hopes the Nobel Peace Prize will help investigative journalism that will hold power to account. Dmitry Muratov is the first Russian to win the Nobel Peace Prize since Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev in 1990. Gorbachev used some of his prize money to help what would become Novaya Gazeta newspaper. The money went toward buying office equipment and computers. Muratov was one of the founders of Novaya Gazeta. The Nobel Committee called the publication the most independent newspaper in Russia today. The committee praised the paper for providing Russians with important information rarely mentioned by other media. Muratov dedicated his award to six Novaya Gazeta journalists who were murdered for their reporting on human rights violations and corruption. He said, "Igor Domnikov, Yuri Shekochikin, Anna Politkovskaya, Stas Markilov, Anastasia Baburova, Natasha Estemirova, these are the people who have today won the Nobel Prize." The Committee to Protect Journalists reported that 17 media workers were killed in the Philippines over the past 10 years. 23 were killed in Russia, the group reported. The French group Reporters Without Borders, or RSF, has worked with Ressa and Muratov to defend journalism in their countries. RSF noted, "This prize is a great signal, a very powerful message to defend journalism everywhere." Rice-Andersen told Reuters that she believes the awards will force leaders of both the Philippines and Russia to defend the present situation. She added, I am curious how they will respond.
Russian actor and film director left Earth on a spaceship this week to start filming a movie. Russian officials said the movie will shine a light on Russia's success in space. Dmitry Peskov is press secretary for President Vladimir Putin. We have been pioneers in space and maintained a confident position, Peskov said, adding that space exploration is great for Russia. Actor Yulia Perestyld and director Klim Shipenko took off from a site in Kazakhstan Tuesday with cosmonaut Anton Shkaplerov. They arrived about 3 hours later at the International Space Station, where they will stay for 12 days. The future film is called Challenge. It tells the story of a doctor who hurries to the space station to help an astronaut with a heart problem. The passengers had 4 months to get ready for the space trip. Perestyld said training for the trip was difficult, but she said once they reached their goal, all that will seem not so difficult, and we will remember it with a smile. Shipenko said he will finish the movie back home after filming in space. Two other Russian cosmonauts already on the space station will also perform in the movie. Dmitry Rogozin heads the Russian space agency Roscosmos and has been a major force behind the project. Space deserves being shown in a more professional, artful way, he said. Rogozin said he edited the script himself to correctly represent the realities of space travel. We describe some real emergencies that may happen out there, he said. Oleg Novitsky is an experienced Russian cosmonaut. He will play the character with the heart problem in the movie. When that is done, he will return to the captain's seat of the Soyuz spacecraft and bring the actor and director back to Earth. I'm Dan Friedel.
Most people would not think of friendship and cooperation when considering the animals called vampire bats. But experts say maybe we should. New research shows that vampire bats have deeper social relationships with one another than scientists had thought. The study shows that vampire bats form friendships and meet at feeding time to hunt together. Researchers attached small devices to 50 vampire bats in Panama to follow their path as they feed at night. The bats drink blood from wounds they cause on cows in open fields. The study involved female bats, as researchers believe they have stronger social relationships than males. 23 bats born in the wild had been captured and studied for about 2 years for related research into bat social behavior. Social connections had already been observed among some of them. They live together in trees, clean each other, and share meals. The scientist used tiny sensor devices on the flying mammals to learn whether their hunting behavior was also social. The sensor data showed that the bats would often join a friend while searching for food. Gerald Carter is a scientist with the Ohio State University and the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute. He led the research published in the journal PLOS Biology. This study opens up an exciting new window into the social lives of these animals, he said. Each bat maintains its own network of close, cooperative social bonds. The researchers suspect that the bats join their friends during the hunt to help each other. They think the bats might exchange information about prey position or access to an open wound for feeding. Vampire bats live in the warmer areas of Central and South America. They have wingspans of about 18 centimeters and are the only warm-blooded animals with a blood-only diet. They live in groups called colonies that can number from the tens to thousands of individuals. Simon Ripperger is a researcher at the Smithsonian Tropical Research Institute and a writer of the study. He said, people's first reaction to vampire bats is usually fear. He added, but once you tell them about their complex social lives, they are quite surprised that we can find such behavior that is somewhat similar to what humans do, and which one would maybe expect in primates, in bats. Ripperger noted that the bats are fast runners and have heat sensors in their noses to help them target a good place to bite prey. The bats attack from the ground using their sharp teeth to open a wound on an animal. Then they use their tongues to get blood from the wound. Gerald Carter said there is reason to fear vampire bats because they can spread the deadly disease rabies to both animals and people. But I do think they are beautiful and interesting animals in their own right, Carter added. In this way, they are a bit like grizzly bears, sharks, rats, and venomous snakes. Animals that might not help people in any way and might even endanger them, but should still be appreciated for their own sake.
This week we answer a question from Umut in Turkey. I would like to learn the difference between each other and one another. Thanks in advance. Dear Umut, thank you for writing to us. The pronoun each other means that every member of a group of people or animals does something for or to the other members of the group. Imagine you see two neighbors passing on the street. As they pass, they wave and say hello. You could say,
Carlos waved at Ishmael. Ishmael waved at Carlos.
But that is not the easy way to talk about what you see. Instead, you can say,
Carlos and Ishmael waved at each other.
Let us take a look at more examples of how we use it.
I heard the cats fighting with each other last night. The teacher asked students to help each other in their groups.
In some cases, you can make a possessive pronoun from each other by adding an apostrophe and the letter S.
The children walked two by two, holding each other's hands. At Christmas, the family gets together and opens each other's gifts.
You asked us to compare how we use the expression one another. I read in one dictionary that some English speakers use one another when talking about three or more members of a group, while using each other when talking about just two members of a group. If that is the case, then you would find statements like this.
The baseball players all shook hands with one another after the game. Andy and Raina are always joking with each other.
But I do not think that many of us follow that rule. Instead, we use one another in careful or polite speech or writing, and each other in more casual speech. What question do you have about American English? Send us an email at learningenglish@voanews.com. And that's Ask a Teacher. I'm Jill Robbins.
Our story today is called The Return of a Private. It was written by Hamlin Garland. Here is Harry Monroe with our story.
The soldiers cheered as the train crossed the border into the state of Wisconsin. It had been a long trip from the south back to their homes in the north. One of the men had a large red scar across his forehead. Another had an injured leg that made it painful for him to walk. The third had unnaturally large and bright eyes because he had been sick with malaria. The three soldiers spread their blankets on the train seats and tried to sleep. It was a cold evening, even though it was summertime. Private Smith, the soldier with the fever, shivered in the night air. His joy in coming home was mixed with fear and worry. He knew he was sick and weak. How could he take care of his family? Where would he find the strength to do the heavy work all farmers have to do? He had given 3 years of his life to his country, and now he had very little money and strength left for his family. Morning came slowly with a pale yellow light. The train was slowing down as it came into the town of La Crosse, where the three soldiers would get off the train. The station was empty because it was Sunday. "I'll get home in time for dinner," Smith thought. She usually has dinner about 1 o'clock on Sunday afternoon. And he smiled. Smith and the other two soldiers jumped off the train together. "Well, boys," Smith began, "here's where we say goodbye. We've marched together for many miles. Now I suppose we are done." The three men found it hard to look at each other. "We ought to go home with you," one of the soldiers said to Smith. "You'll never be able to walk all those miles with that heavy pack on your back." "Oh, I'm all right," Smith said, putting on his army cap. Every step takes me closer to home. They all shook hands. Goodbye. Good luck. Same to you. Goodbye. Smith turned and walked away quickly. After a few minutes, he turned again and waved his cap. His two friends did the same. Then they marched away with their long, steady soldier's step. Smith walked for a while, thinking of his friends. He remembered the many days they had been together during the war. He thought of his friend Billy Tripp, too. Poor Billy. A bullet came out of the sky one day and tore a great hole in Billy's chest. Smith knew he would have to tell the sad story to Billy's mother and young wife. But there was little to tell. The sound of a bullet cutting through the air, Billy crying out, then falling with his face in the dirt. The fighting he had done since then had not made him forget the horror of that moment when Billy died. Soon the fields and houses became familiar. Smith knew he was close to home. The sun was burning hot as he began climbing the last hill. Finally, he reached the top and looked down at his farm in the beautiful valley. He was almost home. Mrs. Smith was alone on the farm with her three children. Mary was 9 years old, Tommy was 6, and little Teddy had just turned 4. Mrs. Smith had been dreaming about her husband when the chickens awakened her that Sunday morning. She got out of bed, got dressed, and went out to feed the chickens. Then she saw the broken fence near the chicken house. She had tried to fix it again and again. Mrs. Smith sat down and cried. The farmer, who had promised to take care of the farm while her husband was away, had been lazy and dishonest. The first year, he shared the wheat with Mrs. Smith. But the next year he took almost all of it for himself. She had sent him away. Now the fields were full of wheat, but there was no man on the farm to cut it down and sell it. 6 weeks before, her husband told her in a letter that he would be coming home soon. Other soldiers were returning home, but her husband had not come. Every day she watched the road leading down the hill. This Sunday morning she could no longer stand being alone. She jumped up, ran into the house, and quickly dressed the children. She carefully locked the door and started walking down the road to the farmhouse of her neighbor, Mrs. Gray. Mary Gray was a widow with a large family of strong sons and pretty daughters. She was poor, but she never said no to a hungry person who came to her farm and asked for food. She worked hard, laughed often, and was always in a cheerful mood. When she saw Mrs. Smith and the children coming down the road, Mrs. Gray went out to meet them. "Please come right in, Mrs. Smith. We were just getting ready to have dinner." Mrs. Smith went into the noisy house. Mrs. Gray's children were laughing and talking all at the same time. Soon she was laughing and singing with the rest of them. The long table in the kitchen was piled with food. There were potatoes, fresh corn, apple pies, hot bread, sweet pickles, bread and butter, and honey. They all ate until they could eat no more. Then the men and children left the table. The women stayed to drink their tea. "Mama," said one of Mrs. Gray's daughters, "please read our fortunes in the tea leaves. Tell us about our futures." Mrs. Gray picked up her daughter's cup and stirred it first to the left, then to the right. Then she looked into it with a serious expression. "I see a handsome man with a red beard in your future," she said. Her daughter screamed with laughter. Mrs. Smith trembled with excitement when it was her turn. "Somebody is coming home to you," Mrs. Gray said slowly. "He's carrying a rifle on his back, and he's almost there." Mrs. Smith felt as if she could hardly breathe. "And there he is," Mrs. Gray cried, pointing to the road. They all rushed to the door to look. A man in a blue coat, with a gun on his back, was walking down the road toward the Smith farm. His face was hidden by a large pack on his back. Laughing and crying, Mrs. Smith grabbed her hat and her children and ran out of the house. She hurried down the road after him, calling his name and pulling her children along with her. But the soldier was too far away for her voice to reach him. When she got back to their farm, she saw the man standing by the fence. He was looking at the little house and the field of yellow wheat. The sun was almost touching the hills in the west. The cowbells rang softly as the animals moved toward the barn. "How peaceful it all is," Private Smith thought. "How far away from the battles, the hospitals, the wounded, and the dead. My little farm in Wisconsin. How could I have left it for those years of killing and suffering?" Trembling and weak with emotion, Mrs. Smith hurried up to her husband. Her feet made no sound on the grass. But he turned suddenly to face her. For the rest of his life, he would never forget her face at that moment. "Emma," he cried. The children stood back, watching their mother kissing this strange man. He saw them, and kneeling down, he pulled from his pack three huge red apples. In a moment, all three children were in their father's arms. Together, the family entered the little, unpainted farmhouse. Later that evening, after supper, Smith and his wife went outside. The moon was bright above the eastern hills. Sweet, peaceful stars filled the sky as the night birds sang softly and tiny insects buzzed in the soft air. His farm needed work. His children needed clothing. He was no longer young and strong. But he began to plan for next year. With the same courage he had faced the war, Private Smith faced his difficult future.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.